the Parlement of Paris. But the Paris magistrates proved just as awkward, echoing the notables' claims for the Estates General, and adding their voice to growing calls for its convocation. In May 1788, after long months of bluster and negotiation, the regime finally lost patience and issued edicts dissolving the Parlement. There was a nationwide outcry. Riots broke out in cities throughout France, including Grenoble, where on the 7th of June, protesters showered roof tiles on soldiers sent to enforce the edicts. Known as the Day of Tiles, it was a foretaste of the symbolic journée, or days of action, which would become the milestones of the revolution. Unrest in the countryside was exacerbated by some of the worst weather conditions in living memory, as freak hailstorms devastated crops in the fields. In August, with bankruptcy looming ever nearer, the government finally backed down and agreed to convene the Estates General for May 1789. Necker returned to the financial helm amid general celebrations, and the Parlement were promptly reinstated. Only now that the Estates General was scheduled for the following year did anyone think to ask what it actually was. How would it work, this body that hadn't met for nearly two centuries? The Paris Parlement provided one answer. It would be exactly what it was in 1614. There would be equal representation for all three estates, which would meet and vote separately, thus ensuring that the first and second estates, the clergy and the nobility, could always outvote the third, the commons. But there were other answers, too, answers that made the Parlement look seriously out of touch. In the ferment of pamphleteering and public debate that erupted over the question in 1788, a new slogan emerged. The third estate is not an order. It is the nation itself. Many voices, including those of the mysterious Society of 30, a patriot clique whose members included several future revolutionaries, thus advocated doubling the representation of the third and voting not by order but by head. This would give the third the same voting power as the nobility and clergy combined. It would also make the Estates General look much more like a national assembly on the British parliamentary model, not at all what Louis had had in mind when he called it. In December 1788, however, the king agreed to the doubling of the third, and elections to the Estates General began in the new year. At the same time, the Crown encouraged local communities to draw up lists of their grievances for submission to the new body. The resulting cahiers de doléances cover a wide range of complaints, from the misbehaviour of local lords' pigeons to the perceived inequities of the tax system. Many showed an appetite for constitutional change, but none called for anything as radical as an end to the monarchy. So it was that at the beginning of May 1789, some 1,200 representatives of the clergy, nobility, and commons gathered at Versailles to be formally presented to the king and to take up their seats in the long-awaited Estates General. Seldom had so many hopes rested on so untried an institution. What happened next looked like a descent into procedural wrangling. In fact, it was a battle for the soul of the nation. The vital question of whether the estates should vote by order or by head had been left open at the end of 1788. Now it resurfaced with a vengeance. The representatives of the third estate, dominated as they were by lawyers, made a preemptive stand for voting by head, effectively refusing to open for business unless all three orders merged into a single body. When, after weeks of negotiations, the other two orders still declined to join them, the third unilaterally declared themselves a national assembly. 2 days later, the clergy threw in their lot with them. The next day, the 20th of June, the deputies showed up for work only to find the doors of the assembly hall barred and guarded against them. This was actually less sinister than it looked. The hall was being prepared for a royal session of the Estates General, scheduled for the 23rd. But no one had yet told Jean-Sylvain Bailly, the newly elected president of the third, and the deputies scented a conspiracy against their rights. What could it mean? Was the government about to dissolve the assembly? Accompanied by an excited crowd, they made their way to a neighbouring indoor tennis court. Here, at the prompting of Jean-Joseph Mounier, a deputy from Grenoble who had cut his political teeth on the Day of Tiles, they each took a solemn oath to God and the fatherland never to separate until they had established an equitable constitution. Immortalized in Jacques-Louis David's heroic painting, the tennis court oath provided the first great tableau of the revolution. 3 days later, the three orders assembled for the royal session of the Estates General. The king delivered a mixed message to the deputies. Yes, there could be reforms, but the seigneurial dues and ecclesiastical tithes would not be abolished, and the three orders must remain separate. "If you abandon me in this great enterprise," Louis warned, "I will work alone for the welfare of my peoples." He then commanded the deputies to disperse and left the hall, followed by the nobles and several of the clergy. But the third stayed put. One of their number, Honoré Gabriel Mirabeau, a leonine figure who had been a leading light of the Society of Thirty, urged his fellow deputies to hold to their oath and stand by everything they had done so far. "We are here by the will of the people," he declared. "We will not be dispersed except at the point of bayonets." It was the moment of truth. Over the next couple of days, the clergy and several nobles, led by the king's libertine cousin, the Duc d'Orléans, came over to the third and joined the National Assembly. Rumours that Necker had resigned led to riots in Paris, and in Versailles angry crowds burst into the palace itself. The revolution was moving onto the streets. Once again, Louis's response sent a mixed message. On the one hand, he made a virtue of the inevitable by ordering the deputies of the First and Second Estates to combine with the Third. On the other, he mobilized his troops. Tensions mounted as thousands of soldiers, many of them foreign mercenaries, mustered around Paris and Versailles. But the deputies stuck to their task, rechristening themselves the Constituent Assembly, and moving ahead with plans to draw up a new constitution. Then, on the 11th of July, the king sacked Necker. Uproar exploded in the capital. Mobs rampaged through the streets, arming themselves with whatever weapons they could find and tearing down sections of the hated customs wall which encircled the capital. In an attempt to protect public order, the Electoral Assembly of Paris gathered at the Hôtel de Ville to form a municipal governing body, soon to be called the Commune. They also set up a citizens' militia, which, as the National Guard, would be central to the dynamics of the revolution. It was in this atmosphere of barely contained violence that